How many of you were here, Erev Yom Kippur, by the chair? And you came back. The other guys, they don't know, but you guys came back. That's a good sign. That's a good sign. Okay. All right, so the subject that I picked to speak about tonight... I don't need a mic, but anyway. The subject I picked to speak about tonight is one of the favorite... I guess everybody growing up, when you learn Chumash, everybody has like their favorite character in the Chumash. Some people, Avram Avinu, some people like Yitzchak, some people are very close to Yaakov, some people are like Yosef. And, you know, every kid, he picks his, you know... I have some students, they like Lot. You know, it depends on the student someday. It depends on which student. But, you know, one guy said, like, I'm into Paro big time. You know, everyone has their thing. I was always into Moshe Rabbeinu. He was my star, my superstar. And I'm going to tell you tonight why. And I think that, again, I want to ask forgiveness if I hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not here to hurt anyone's feelings, but you know, when you talk about a lot of things, and people go through a lot of things in life, sometimes by saying things you bring back, you know, memories, and you open up doors that were been closed for a while, and it hurts. That's not what I'm here for. So I'm just asking forgiveness if anyone is hurt. It wasn't definitely not meant. I'm really talking to myself, and I'm letting you listen. So if you want to follow me to the United States on the plane, I talk to myself for 11 hours. You want to sit next to me? I got no problem. All right, so let's talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. Really, what I love about Moshe Rabbeinu, a lot of you guys don't know me very well. You either love me or you hate me. That's pretty much what I'm about. Why? Because my father, who brought me up, was a United States Marine in the Korean War. And he did never let me feel sorry for myself. So I'm not one of those guys that lets my students feel sorry for themselves. And we're living in a generation of the feel sorry, where, you know, it's not my fault, it's my parents' fault, it's my rabbi's fault, it's every single person's and God's fault in the world, except my fault. It's really not your guy's fault for thinking that it's not your fault, okay? Because, not to bash psychology, chas v'shalom, but to bash psychology a little bit, the first thing when you walk into a therapist is they're going to prove to you why it is not your fault. And therefore, the first question that's asked, and I actually spoke to a room, more people in the room than this, who were religious therapists. And what I spoke about was that when a kid walks in for therapy, and the first thing you say is, so, you don't get along with your parents, do you? Right, so right away what you're telling the kid is that the reason you're here is because you're not getting along with your parents, which is very negative. And then they start to ask questions. Why are you depressed? Must be because of your parents, your father, your mother, abuse, your teacher, a million different reasons. Instead of saying, you know, maybe we need to talk to you because your shoulder is dislocated, and it doesn't really matter why it's dislocated. If I'm a doctor, I gotta pop that shoulder back in. It doesn't matter, you know, if you say like, well, my shoulder's dislocated because it was my fault that I ran into a wall. Oh, okay, then if it's your fault, you know, we gotta fix it. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. So I'm very anti the fault thing. You know, the guy's hurting, the guy needs to grow. Stop telling him that's everybody else's fault. Tell him, hey, whoever's fault it is, you're on the floor, you got to get up, you got to stand. That's how I was brought up, and that became part of me. And whether I played hockey or I played basketball, whatever I played, the old coaches in the old days used to say, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. My father taught me, it's not whether you win or lose, it's whether you win. So you have to understand my psyche coming in. So I don't want to hurt anybody. And it's the same thing in marriage. In marriage therapy, I work a lot in Shalom Bayit. So in marriage therapy, the first thing they do is they walk to the therapist. Therapist tells the woman, okay, I want you to write down 5 things you don't like about your husband. And then they tell the husband, I want you to write 5 of the worst things that you don't like about your wife. Right? Here you got this guy and this girl. They're not getting along, because if they were getting along, they wouldn't be in therapy. Now, since the therapist says, okay, you go first, tell him 5 reasons you don't like him. Right? Now, he knew 3 of them. But the other 2, so there's like big fight right in the session, like, that bothers you? You know? And then he says, well, you got to hear my list. And his list, of course, and they end up killing each other. So like, why don't you start the therapy session with, write three things that you really love about each other. And all of a sudden, like, give me one thing you really love about each other. And all of a sudden the guy's like, you really think I'm good looking? You never said that to me. And she's like, you know, you really think I'm a good cook? I always thought you thought your mother was a better cook. And all of a sudden the whole relationship, because it starts off positive, the whole relationship, this is what I call the therapist. I said, the first thing you got to tell the kid is, what do you like about life? You know, not what don't you like, you know, why does life suck? Give me five reasons. That's not a positive way of talking to a child, instead of saying, okay, write three things down on your paper that your mother did for you in your life. Say, all right, she diapered me, she burped me, she took me to the doctor. Okay, so if I'm the therapist, I'm like, okay, now listen, that's it. When you diaper a kid, when you burp a kid, at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, your mother had a hard day, imagine, and your father's walking around, okay, you guys, most of you don't have kids yet, but if you can imagine, you have this big, powerful guy, he's the chairman of the board of a company, he's a cool guy, gets dressed to kill, right? Look at him with his little baby at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking around, half asleep in his pajamas or his underwear, right? Come on, give me a burp, baby. This guy's the chairman of the board, right? Yeah, but as a father, that's what you got to do. And then you're home taking care of the kid and you open that diaper and like, no way. But all fathers, we do this. So there's no kid in the world that shouldn't have a karsatov appreciation for his parents from when he was one and two and three, and he was burping and crying and having diarrhea, going to the doctor, and they have to show up to PTA, and your mother's making you breakfast and lunch and supper, and your father's working. So if you start off on that point, and you start off on a karsatov, and you start off on appreciation, the whole therapy, the whole session is going to be very positive. We live in a world, I have this one kid, I'll tell you a story. I have this one kid, he really comes from a good family. Kid is like totally depressed. He comes to the therapist. The therapist says, yeah, huh? Your father, he abuses you physically, doesn't he? He hits you. Kid's like, no, never hit me. Yeah, but verbally, right? He tells you, like, you're no good. He curses you. He goes, my father? My father never said a bad word in his life. But your mother, she's one mean woman, right? He's like, no, my mother is great. Your Rebbe hit you, didn't he? No, my Rebbe never hit you. You know, maybe you should be talking to me instead of me. Right? And they go through everything because in our generation, guys, it can't be anyone in this room's fault. Nothing's your fault. In our generation, it's everyone else's fault. Can't be your fault, God forbid. So when I started becoming a rabbi and I started speaking, and I started telling guys, like, it's enough. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Get up. So some guys got up and never came back. Some guys got up and got their friends to come back. Because the truth is that to make excuses and to give blame, you're not going to go anywhere. In my house, anytime I came up with an excuse, my father said, if you have an excuse, it means you failed. If you have an excuse, it means you didn't get it done. I'm sure there's a lot of ball players in this room. When you lose, right, you get off the court, the first thing you tell everyone is, yeah, that referee, he was cheating for the other side. You know, there's all these stories. You never heard a team that wins. Well, you want to hear my excuse? You want to hear my excuse for winning? Guy never comes home with 100 on his test and say, hey, you want to hear my excuse for getting 100? The minute you walk into the room and say, Ma, before you look at my paper, I got to tell you my excuse, you failed. We know that. There's nothing to talk about. So excuses will get you nowhere. I'll tell you a famous story. Now, I'm coming in here, and I got a lot of stuff prepared, but I'm telling you that I always say a tefillah before Hashem, before I walk in. I know what I want to say, but I don't know what you guys need to hear. And sometimes what I got to say is not what you need to hear. So I always daven to Hashem. But when I come in here, I don't want to say what I want to say. It may come out of my mouth what they need to hear. So this story that I'm about to tell you has absolutely nothing to do with my speech tonight. But there's a reason that some guy needs to hear this. So this is a famous excuse story. I don't know if you ever heard this, but this excuse story was amazing to me. So this guy comes up to Shemayim after 120 years as Judgment Day. And they say, you know, you never went to shul to pray. You never davened in shul. And the bezin's sitting there and they're like, why didn't you daven? Why didn't you go to shul? And this guy says, I'll tell you the truth. My parents never sent me to yeshiva. I was already too old and I felt embarrassed to start, you know, going to, you know, read. I didn't know how to read. Nobody ever taught me how to read. And therefore, since I didn't know how to read, I was too embarrassed to go to shul and ask people to show me what page. So that's why I never prayed. Good excuse. So the bezin, they're huddling, the three rabbis, and they're like, you know, we can't send him to hell because it's not his fault. But we can't send him to heaven because he can't read. You know, and in heaven, what do? They learn Torah. You know, what's he going to do there? They can't read. So what are we going to do with him? So they're sitting there and they say, you know what? We're going to give him a passport. This passport, you can go to heaven. You can go to Gehenna, to hell. Wherever you want, you got a passport. You can travel wherever you want. This guy's like, wow, I beat the court system. You know, I got away with this. He was all happy, took his passport, he comes to heaven. There's the angel standing at the door of heaven, right? And he says to the angel, says, you can't just walk into heaven. What do you think this is? You got to come with an entourage, with the rabbis to get you in. He says, oh, you don't know what I got. He pulls out the passport from the Bezdin, stamp from the Bezdin. This person, Yehuda ben Chaim, can go anytime he wants, in and out of heaven, and anytime he wants, in and out of hell, anytime he wants. Guy comes dancing into heaven, right? He looks around, people learning and singing. It smells beautiful. It's beautiful. It's unbelievable. But he's got one problem. He ain't got no friends in heaven. He doesn't recognize anybody there. So he's very bored. So he spends a couple of hours. Yeah, this is not for me. Comes back out. The angel goes, you can't just leave heaven. And he just walks out of heaven. He goes, oh, changing of the guard. You weren't here before. My passport. He says, oh, passport? Okay, he reads it. Yeah, he can go. Come on. Fine. Let's him go. He comes to the gate of hell, this big, huge angel standing there, fire-breathing angel, says, you can't just come into hell. You know, you got to be sent here with that bad angel he's got to bring you. He says, oh, man, you guys, you have no communication. He says, get some cell phones up there, you know. get a plan. He says, I have a passport. He shows him the passport. So-and-so, Chaim, yeah, you can go to heaven anytime he wants. You can go to hell anytime he wants. He says, okay, come in. It happens to be Shabbos. The fires are off. He comes walking in. He meets this friend and that friend, all the chaver he used to hang out with. They're all there. It's unbelievable, right? He's sitting there. It's party time. All of a sudden, one of his friends says to him, listen, Shabbos is about to be over. They're going to turn up all the fires. You better get out of here. He says, well, I'm not worried about no fires. Anyway, to make a long story short, the fires start coming up and it's getting really hot and he's very uncomfortable and he goes to leave. Except the problem was that the angel of Shabbos that was standing at the door when he came in is gone. There's a new angel there. And he comes to the new angel. We'll see how many guys get this. It's usually delayed action. I'm expecting 1 to 2 minutes that everyone in this room will get this. Okay? So hang on. So the angel's standing there. He goes up to the angel and he says, I would like to leave hell. It's getting really hot. And the angel says, nobody leaves hell until your time's up. He goes, ah, another one. Pulls out his passport, gives it to the angel. The angel looks at it, turns it over, turns it to the side, turns it the other way. He says, this is really cool. Takes it, and he flicks it into the fire. And the whole thing burns up. The guy turns to me, what are you, crazy? You just burnt up my passport. Now I'm never going to get out of here. And I can't go to heaven. I can't. What'd you do? How did you do that? He says, what do you mean? What do you mean I burnt your passport? What are you talking about? He says, what did it say in it? That I could go here and I could go there and it was signed by Bezdin. Angel looks at him and says, I'm really sorry, man, but you can't leave. I'm sorry. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't read. Ooh. 2 minutes you got. The excuse that you use, you think that you're going to get away with. His excuse that he couldn't read, in the end, is just going to come back to burn you. Excuses is failure. Excuses means that you didn't get it done. There is no one in the Torah that has more excuses, no one, than Moshe Rabbeinu. Now let me take you through Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Moshe Rabbeinu's parents, Yocheved and Amram, separated not to have him. Okay? They didn't want to have any more children. And Miriam came and Miriam said, you're worse than Paro. Paro's killing the boys and the girls. Maybe you're going to have a daughter. So therefore you have to get back together. So first thing we have to know is that Moshe Rabbeinu was an unwanted child. That'll send you to therapy. Your parents separated not to have you. It's pretty sad. Okay, but they finally had him. So what did they do? They hid him. They hid him for 3 months. Keep him away from anybody. Okay? Hey, why'd you hide me? We hid you to keep you alive. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So what did you do after the 3 months? When I was safe? No problem. We took you. We put you in a little boat. And we abandoned you. We put you in the Nile River. Hey, 3 months, little kid, take care of yourself. Therapy? This is already medicine. Unwanted, hidden, abandoned. Along comes Batya, adopted. And he gets adopted by some Egyptian woman, okay, who totally psychologically did the worst thing. They mixed this kid up totally because she took him out of the Nile and then sent him back to his parents. And then when he was 2 years old, took him back from his parents. The kid has no idea if he's coming or going. Is that my parents? Or is she my mother? Is that my mother? Or is that my mother? Okay. He's adopted. He's put into the worst, lowest, immoral place in the whole world. Mitzrayim was the most immoral place, and who was the head of it was Paro, and this little boy, Moshe Rabbeinu, is adopted to be part of, in fact, it says that he was going to be the next king. Moshe Rabbeinu, Rashi says, was going to be the next king of Mitzrayim. Okay, so he's an adopted child. Did he go to yeshiva? No. He went to Cairo High, a public school in the middle of Egypt. He was brought up in the palace. Never went to Or Sameach, never learned Aleph Beis, didn't go to yeshiva, was brought up by the lowest people in the whole world. On top of that, what kind of parents adopted him? This Paro guy. Sure, let's give the kid a choice for lunch. The crown or some burning hot coals. That's a nice choice, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, he's already adopted by the king. They put in front of him hot coals. They put in front of him a gold crown. He puts his hands in the hot coal because the Malach pushes it. And he ends up burning his tongue so bad, the Medrash says, that he had a terrible lisp and he had a terrible stutter that he could hardly talk. He was, imagine, okay, a disability like that he could not talk. We're going through probably every psychological damage you can do to a human being. So he's adopted, he's abandoned, he's unwanted, he's mixed up, totally mixed up. And on top of that, he's disabled. He can't speak. But he overcomes it. That's why he's my champion. He overcomes it, and he says, the bottom line is, I'm a Jew. And therefore, the Torah tells us that when he went out, right? He went out and he said, I am a Jew, and he saw the pain of his brethren. He saw the Jews were being beat up, and he walked out and he made a decision. What's my choice? To be a Jewish slave or to be the prince of Egypt? And he makes the most amazing choice. I wouldn't have made that choice. And he says, I'm going to kill the Egyptian because the bottom line is public school, the palace and everything, I am still a Jew. And he kills the Mitzri. And at that point, the Jews should have said, he's a hero. We should be able to give a class on him. Look, guys, he went through this, he went through this, he went through this, he went through this. And in the end, instead of being angry about it all, instead of making excuses, instead of the therapist saying, it's not your fault you went to public school, it's not your fault you were abandoned, it's not your fault you're adopted. Nothing's your fault, you can do whatever you want. He said, I'm a Jew. And I'm putting my whole life on the line because I'm a Jew, and he kills the Egyptian. So what happens? How does he get rewarded for that? The Jew that he saves, that he gave everything up for, goes and rats to Paro that your son, that you adopted, the prince of Egypt, he's a murderer. He killed an Egyptian. So Paro says, really? Fine, let's put his head on the block and let's kill him. So the Jew that he saved ended up ratting on him to try to have him dead. At that point, I don't think anyone in this room would have stayed a Jew. Here I go, I'm willing to give everything up, and the Jew that I saved tries to get me killed. So Moshe Rabbeinu at that point ran out of Mitzrayim. So now he's not the prince of Egypt. He's a guy on the run. He comes to Midian. There's something the Medrash says in between. He ended up in Ethiopia. But he ends up in Midian. He comes to Midian. And he's a big champion. Ish Mitzri. And Yisro takes one look and says, oh no, I don't want this guy in my house. I ran away from Paro. And if they're going to come looking for this guy, they're going to come get me. So he put him into a dungeon for 7 years. Or longer, 8, 10 years. Put him in the Medrash says he put Moshe Rabbeinu in a dungeon for 10 years, his future father-in-law, and for 10 years his wife Zipporah came and fed him. He finally gets out, and I think at this point Moshe Rabbeinu had it. He had it. He just had it with life, and he said, "You know what? I can't deal with people. They try to kill me. They don't want me. They burn me. I've had it. I'm going. Where am I going? I'm going to the desert. There's no humans in the desert. I'm just going to chill with my sheep in the desert, and I'm not going to deal with anybody's problems." It's true. Riot sign, that's it. Double mouth to the same. That's it, I'm out of here. And he went into the desert, and he's beginning to chill. And Shalom Aleichem, a voice from a bush in the fire. Shalom Aleichem, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm God. And guess what I want you to do? I want you to go back to Mitzrayim, I want you to go back to all the pain. Very dangerous to go back to the pain in your head of all the things you went through life. I want you to go back to all the pain, to the Jews who spoke Lashon Hara on you, to the Jews who killed you, to the Jews who abandoned you, to the man who burnt your tongue. And I want you to go back to the throne. I want you to take all these people out. I want you to be a Jew. And not only that, I want you to stand in front of Paro with that burnt tongue, with that disability, with that stutter and that lisp, and I want you to talk about taking out Klal Yisrael. Rabbeinu was like, no, you have to read this Parsha Shmos. You have to read it before you learn everything else about the rest of Shmos, by Yikra, by Midbar Zvarim. You must read Parsha Shmos. You must get an understanding, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the star of the next four books. You must get an understanding of this man. Okay? Everyone thinks, Moshe Rabbeinu, yeah, he was born good. He went through hell. He had every excuse in the world. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God came to him and said, I want you to take your Jews out of Mitzrayim, what did he say? No. I can't do it. And I think that this is the greatest psychology lesson, everything's in the Torah, that a person could ever learn. He told God no, and he told God why no. He said, I have low self-esteem. Nobody is going to listen to me. Not the Jews, and not the Mitzrayim. I don't believe in myself. Can you blame him? He said, I don't believe in myself. I can't do this. Hashem, I don't want to do this. He said it 7 times. Hashem said, I want you to go, I can't. I want you to go, I can't. In our generation, if you would have asked him once and he would have said, I can't, okay, you don't have to, Hashem, for long. Okay, you're right. You sit in the desert with your little lambs. You have lamb chops every day for lunch. In fact, you don't even have to cook it because you're a little bit at risk right now. You're in the desert by yourself. So we'll get a bunch of rabbis to come and we'll cook it for you. And then we'll take you for a trip. Maybe to Europe. Maybe to the islands. Buy you some clothing. Can we get you some clothing? Maybe you need some clothing. I'm not making fun of Shomer rabbis. I'm really not. But that's our generation, and I'm part of it. I'm part of it. The kid that goes out and smokes on Shabbos has 40 rabbis running over to him. What can I do for you? Oh, if you don't smoke, come to my house for Shabbos. And my wife makes the best chalent, and you want to fly to Israel, we'll pay you a ticket. And, oh, look at that clothing. We'll take you out $2,000 in Bloomingdale's, whatever you want. We'll get you tongue. Okay? Ah! Why? Because he took a cigarette out on Shabbos in Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn. And the guy that's sitting and keeping Shabbos and he's learning and he's doing what he's supposed to? Boring. Who's interested? Ignore him. No life. So if I lived in your generation, I'd be out there with 2 cigarettes coming out both sides. And probably a hoop in the middle, like 2 cigarettes. I'll have 600 rabbis all over me. I'll be flying to Israel, Switzerland, I'll be having trips. Akash Baruch Hu didn't do that, guys. God didn't do that. Didn't say Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, you're right. You really went through a lot. It's okay, just stay in the desert. Have some lamb chops. I'll go find someone else who didn't have such a tough life like you. And I really feel bad for you, Moshe. And that's God. God said, no. Go. And Moshe said, no. So I want to go to a very important part. I forgot to ask Max to bring me a lamp. You don't have a lamp laying around here, do you? Okay. I'll talk to you about the lamp. You'll understand what I'm saying. Listen carefully. You have a lamp? You got a lamp. You know that? Well, okay. All right, listen carefully. Okay, Baruch Hu says to Moshe the following. If you get a lamp, yeah.
Small one?
Yeah, one that plugs into the wall. Maybe one that plugs into the wall. We just take one of the guys who's falling asleep and now listening to my shade, just puts his finger in the socket. A little lamp trick, it works. Okay, listen carefully. He says the following. Bayan Moshe. Finally, after, this is already 5 times. Vayam Moshe, Moshe answered Hashem, Vayom, and he said, Vehein lo yaminu li, they will never believe me. Velo yishmu bakoli, they will never listen to my voice. They don't believe me, nobody believes me, nobody listens to me. Have you heard that before? Moshe Rabbeinu said this to Hashem. Ki yomu lo nireh lech Hashem, that you're going to say, you made up the whole story, God never appeared to you. Okay, here comes an amazing pasuk. Okay, now this poor guy is really going through it. He's like telling Hashem, no one's going to listen to me. Listen to what Hashem answers him. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, what's in your hand? And he seems to be very chutzpahdik. He says, Vayomer mate. He says, you want to know what's in my hand? A stick. Now here you have Moshe Rabbeinu. God's telling him, listen, we're going to go down to Mitzrayim, Makis, I'm going to take them Jews out. I'm God, I can do anything. Right? By the way, Moshe's standing there with his keys in his hands. By the way, God says to him, what do you got in your hand? I'm like, God, if you don't know what I have in my hand, that's like a simple trick. Like, how are you taking the Jews out of Mitzrayim? So it must be a much deeper meaning what you're asking me. It's like, I catch a kid in my class and he's drinking soda. And I'm like, what do you got in your hand? And he's like, soda? I'll kill him. What I'm saying is, put it underneath your desk. Now, I know what's in your hand. You're holding it in front of my face. Hashem asks him, what's in your hand? And he's got a stick. He's like, I got a stick. And you guys learned it 100 times, and you're like, yeah, that's cool. You know, wow, nothing happened. You should have said, why are you asking me this, Hashem? There's a deeper meaning. What's the meaning of mate, like a macho? What was Hashem telling me? And he's answering, I got a stick. Okay. So what Hashem was asking him was something very important for all of us. Hashem was answering, I hear you have low self-esteem. I hear you went through hell. I hear you have a terrible life. I hear everything that you're saying. But if you understand what you have in your hand, then you're not going to feel depressed. And you're going to know that you could do anything. So he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, do you know what you have in your hand? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, yes. I know what I have in my hand. I have the stick. Now, what is the theory of the stick? What is Hashem asking? A stick, the power of the stick in your hand is your hand, not the stick. If you have a stick and you point it to the right, the stick goes to the right. You point it to the left, it goes to the left. If I'm Barry Bonds and the stick is a bat, right, then I have the power to knock over so many home runs. If I'm Rabbi Wallerstein and I have a bat, I have the power to foul off so many balls, right? But I'm not hitting any home runs. So the power of the bat is the one who wields it, is the hand that wields it. The stick itself, if you leave it on the floor, it has no power whatsoever. I knew exactly my father's power. Okay, I knew exactly, because when he hit me with the stick, I knew that it was his hand. I knew exactly how much it hurt. And they're like, oh, now we understand. He's got a problem. Rebbe's there. Oh, no, he didn't hit me with the stick. A couple of hangers, but not. So the power, Hashem asked Moshe Rabbeinu, do you understand that the whole power of the stick is in the hand? So Moshe Rabbeinu said, yes. So Hashem said, so what are you worried about? If you're in my hand, even if you are abused and you went through a terrible life and you have a reason to be depressed, but you're in my hand. If you're in my hand and you have the power, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Stop going backwards. You're in my hand and you have the power of my hand. Power of God's hand. If we're each one of us is a stick in Hashem's hand, there's nothing we can't do. So Moshe Rabbeinu answered and he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I understand. Hashem said, to be a leader in Klal Yisrael, you have to know that it's not you. You have no power at all. A person's life could be gone in 1 second, a heart attack, an aneurysm. You're gone in 1 second. You're in Hashem's hands. Hashem said, if you're in my hand, what are you fetching about? You have the most unbelievable power. Nobody can stop you. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I understand. And therefore, Rashi says, don't say, Mazeh biyadecha. Don't say Hashem was saying, what is in your hand? Say, Mizeh biyadecha. Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't have to feel bad. You should learn from what is in your hand. Mizeh shebiyadecha, because you are just a stick in my hand. And that makes a lot of sense. Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I understand. But Hashem told him something even bigger. And Hashem said, okay, layomeh hishlichu arza. Throw the stick onto the floor. So what happens if you have a stick on the floor? A stick is nothing. A stick in your hand is a weapon, a bat, whatever it is, right? A mop, a broom. A stick on the floor is a stick. Hashem said, no. I want to teach you something very important. He said, throw it down to the floor. He threw it on the floor. What happened? It became a snake. Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from the snake. Moshe Rabbeinu was 20 feet tall. He was not scared of any snakes. Right, all of a sudden, the Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from this snake. And what's this business of throwing the stick down, turning into a snake? And the answer is something that we have to know in Judaism. In the whole world, in all the other religions, if you're in God's hand, you're connected to God. If you're not in God's hand, you're disconnected. And a lot of people feel, you know what, right now I'm disconnected. I'm not connected to Hashem. I don't daven. I have no connection. We're not connected. What's the big deal? I'm a good Jew anyway. I give charity. I talk nice. I'm a good Jew. So I'm not connected to God. Sedekah Shbach wrong. When you're a stick in my hand, if you're not in my hand, you're in the hands of the Nachash. A Jew cannot be either a stick in God's hand or a stick on the floor. He showed Moshe Rabbeinu that a Jew that's not in my hand, in the end, is going to be a nachash. In the end, he's going to be a snake. And Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't deal with that. Why? Thank you very much.
You have a plug around here?
Oh, behind me. Okay, good. So, why could Moshe Rabbeinu handle that? Because he saw a lot of Jews in the generations to come are going to be out of Hashem's hand. And he said, what's going to happen to all those Jews? They're going to turn into snakes? They're going to belong to the Yitzhar, to the Satan? My nation that you want me to lead? There are going to be a lot of Jews that are not in God's name. So Kosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe, there's a thing called tshuva. And all you need to do is to grab that snake by its tail, not even by its head. Grab the snake, do a little tshuva, grab the nachash by its tail. Begin to change a little bit, and you'll turn back into the stick into my hand. And Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't scared anymore. It's a very deep, I'm telling you something, very deep lessons behind the words. But this is the lessons of what's going on between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu you have nothing to worry about, but I'm telling you right now, if you disconnect from me, if you disconnect from me, you're not a disconnected stick, you're a nachash. Which brings me to another story. It happened to me on Nostrand Avenue in Brooklyn. So I have I like fast cars. I'm a rabbi, but I like fast cars, what can I tell you? I didn't get rid of it yet. Soon. I don't have the ponytail, I just have the fast car. You know, you see those 70-year-old guys on the West Side Highway with the sports, super sports car, and he's totally bald, but he's got a little ponytail in the back. He's driving around, he thinks he's 18, because he has a little hair that he can put together in a rubber band, you know what I mean? That's a different shear. That's a whole different shear. How an 80-year-old, what do you think? You think you're 20? You think you can change who you are because you have a ponytail? But I didn't change it. I love fast cars. So I got myself a Cadillac that has 479 horsepower. It's a V. I don't know if you guys know about cars, but it's a V. It's a crazy, not normal car. It's 0 to 60 in 4.2. Now, as you see, I came 15 minutes late. In New York, if I didn't have a car that went from 0 to 60 in 4.2, I'd be even later than I come. So when everyone says, like, you know, that's materialistic, that's gashmius, why do you need a car like that? Right? And the answer is, because I'm always late. So if I can do 0 to 60, 4.2, it saves me each time I do 0 to 60 about 3 to 4 seconds. And you add that up over a whole day, I come 15 minutes earlier. I have a fast car. So that's why I got this car, really, L'Shem Shemayim. It was like totally L'Shem Shemayim. Just so you understand where I come from, when I came into Cadillac to get it, I'm 50 years old. I'm not a youngster, right? So I came into Cadillac, it's an SDS V. And I came into Cadillac, and you know, the STS and the STS-V, the price per month for the lease is like two different worlds. Because this costs like $20,000 more than the other one. So I walk in, and I said, I'd like to get the V. And he looks at me, and I'm in a tie. And he's like, what do you need the V for? He says, where are you going in Brooklyn? 0 to 60 in 4.2. He says, and you're just going to get 100 tickets, you know? What do you need the car? What do you need 479 horses for? I'm like, you have to understand me. I don't need it. And I'm not going 0 to 60 in 4.2. But I need to know that if I want to, I could. That's where I come from, so you understand how crazy I am. So I have this car, and I'm going up to the Catskills. Before I leave, I'm going to, you know, the light goes on. You know, these Cadillacs, whatever. We'll talk about American cars a different time. But the light goes on, that I need oil. Okay, I come flying, come driving into Hess gas station right behind me. And I don't go to the mountains and blow my engine. So I walk in there, and there's a Pakistani guy, you know, behind the counter. And I'm like, that's my V out there. Can I... you tell me what oil I need? You need like 12 quarts of oil for this car, right? So his eyes light up because big engine, you're going to sell a lot of oil. He says, well, I don't really know, but I think you should take the most expensive synthetic oil because I think fast cars, they use synthetic oil. I'm like, that's cool. Sure, because I put the wrong oil in. I'm going to like blow. I said, but that gold bottle is like a gold bottle, you know, it looks really nice. I say, that looks classy. Maybe, you know, like, maybe I should get the gold bottle. I don't know what to buy. I don't know what oil this car uses. SW150, 130, 35, 40, 30. I don't know what to do. I'm standing there. I'm not blowing the engine on this car. And all of a sudden, this black guy behind me says to me, hey, what are you asking this man for? Why don't you just open your glove compartment and look at your manual? Now, this is Rabbi Wallerstein goes around speaking and giving classes. And I'm thinking, Meshugana, what are you asking this guy for? You got a manual from GM. Who made the car? Go to the back, the index, look up oil. You don't have to be a brain surgeon, right? And I'm thinking to myself, how stupid I am. I was going to put, you know, and the first thing it says on a big black list, do not use synthetic oil. Will blow your engine. First line. And I was going to blow that engine, and there would have been horses all over the highway. Running all over the highway. You know, it would be crazy. And I would have been, I wouldn't have been in short for it because I put the wrong oil in. So here I am, and I'm thinking to myself, right? So of course I opened the manual, and it wasn't that oil. It wasn't even such an expensive oil. And I bought the oil, and Baruch Hashem, I went to the mountains, and it hasn't lit up since then. But I wrote a whole share going to the mountains on it. That's what I do. I'm a little out of the box. I'm like, how am I going to make a share about being an idiot and not looking at my manual? I had some guy behind me like, hey man, he was looking at me like, you're supposed to be smart or something, you're driving that car. Right? You're supposed to be smart. Somehow you made the money to pay for it. So like, by the way, don't get nervous. I don't charge for the shiur. It's not like that I charge that much money. They're all looking at me like, you're a Rebbe, what are you driving this car for? I have a business on the side half a day. I manufacture plastic bags. So don't get nervous. They're all like thinking like, he must take a lot of money for speaking. Baruch Hashem. So I'm driving up to 17. I'm like, I got to write a shir on this. So this is the shir I wrote. And this is what it has to do with today. What's a good Jew? So everyone walks around and says, I'm a good Jew. I give charity. I cross old ladies across the street. I put tefillin on once a week or once a month, sometimes on Shabbos. I'm like a special guy. And Yom Kippur, I go to shul. And everyone says, like, how do you define a good Jew? So we're all trying to figure out, everyone's trying to figure out, so what makes a good Jew? Well, what oil do I use? What makes me a good Jew? Learning, davening, eating kosher, keeping Shabbos, being nice. What makes me a good Jew? Hello? You got a manual. Open the manual. Hashem didn't put you on this earth without a manual. He gave you 613 mitzvahs. He gave you a Shulchan Aruch. You want to know what it means to be a good Jew? Open the manual. Index, good Jew. 613 mitzvahs. You can't come and say, you could. You could. If I came to this class and told you the story tonight and said, you know what? Guys, I opened the manual. It said, use 135W. I said, what do they know about this car? I'm buying this in synthetic oil. I don't care what it says. I'm smarter than they are. And up 17, I blew my engine. All over 17. He's like, we're out of here. This rabbi, he's stupid. Stupid. He read the manual. You know, where's GM? GM made the car. GM made the car. I'm not going to look at a Lexus manual for GM. I'm not going to look at Buddhism and Christianity and Hinduism and all the other isms if my car is a Cadillac, because that would be very foolish. If I would put the tires from the Lexus on my car, it's not going to work. So the people that run around and say, being a good human being as a Jew, being a good human being, I like Buddhism. Even though I don't understand how you can follow that guy. 4,500 years, he hasn't lost 1 pound. My kids lost more than he did. And people bow down to him. Hey, jump, do something, you know, say something. Sit still, like, you know, at the end of his life, like he ate and that's it. But why do a lot of Jewish people go there? Because there's we and gi and ji, and the earth forces are together, and it's peaceful, and it's nice, and it's beautiful, and it's yoga, and it's all this good stuff, and you can shave your head, you can all look alike, and you're in the Himalayas, the air is good, it's beautiful, you can smoke weed, you can get out of it, you can blow your head, it's beautiful, everything is cool, everything's nice. But that's for that car. That's for the non-Jew. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God created this car. All of the guys in this room who are Jews, and he said, you're a Cadillac, or whatever you are, you're a Jew. Here's your manual. I'm not telling you to come into the world. You figure out, pour different oils till you blow your engine. Hashem said, I'm giving you a manual, 630 minutes. This is where you look. So if you want to know if I'm a good Jew, here's the book to look if I'm a good Jew. It's not. You don't have to be a brain surgeon. There's a Shulchan Aruch that tells you what a good Jew is. So that's very important to all of us, to know that that's the manual. He wrote it for us. It's a beautiful thing. That's where a person has to look. Okay, getting back onto the subject. So after this whole discussion and this whole thing with Moshe Rabbeinu, you would think that Moshe Rabbeinu would say, okay, I'm the Mateh, and you're the hand. You can write a whole song on this, you know? He's the Mateh, and I'm the hand. Together we can take on anything. That doesn't rhyme. I'm not a rapper. Okay. What does he tell Hashem? I am still not going. Which was amazing to me. You're the Mate. You're in Hashem's hand. Listen to this. And he says, a young man says the following. Hashem says, you don't have to worry about it. I gave you enough signs. Everything's going to be fine. Listen to Moshe Rabbeinu to Hashem. And I've had this in my class. Okay, Hashem, I know what you want me to do, and I know the whole thing with the Mate, and I know everything. But God, listen to this. Plea for help. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Yom Moshe Hashem, be adoni. Hashem, please. Be is a like a prayer on your knees. Be, please, Hashem. I'm begging you. Lo ish devarim anochi. I can't talk. Gam etmol, gam l'shom. Not yesterday. Not 3 days ago. Gam me'oz davrechel avadecha. Not since you began to speak to me. Ki kvad per, kvad loshem anochi. I have a heavy mouth. And I have a heavy tongue. Hashem, don't do this to me. You're just going to embarrass me. I'm begging you. I stutter. I lisp. I'm going to come in front of Paro. The Medrash says, he told Hashem, what's going to happen when I'm coming in front of Paro? I'm coming in front of Paro, Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Stuttering and lisping. and I'm going to tell Paro, and Clyde, I'm taking the Jews out. Because God, my God, said that I'm going to take the Jews out. What's Paro going to say? He's going to say, hold on a second, man. You want me to be scared of your God that he's going to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim? He can't even fix a lisp or a stutter. He's not even a speech therapist, God. You come back here when you know how to talk. And the Medrash says that's what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what they did. They were laughing. Exactly what he said was going to happen. They were laughing. And they said, this moron, he can't even get a word out of his mouth. We're going to be worried about your God? Tell your God to take you back into the desert and give you some speech lessons. The Medrash says this is what happened. From Moshe Rabbeinu went through. So he begged Hashem. He said, Hashem, I have so many excuses. I can't talk the Torah. You know, the Torah is telling us you're not supposed to talk about someone's disability. That's the first thing you learn in therapy. Never talk about a disability. When I was a kid growing up, maybe you realize it by now, maybe that I had a terrible lisp. Terrible lisp. You're talking a long time ago, 40 years ago. And in my school, they had just gotten intercom. I was like, whoa, we got an intercom. It's amazing. My mazel, right? I'm a little fifth grader. So the silly secretary, every Thursday at 3 o'clock, you'd hear across the whole school, because they didn't know how to work that intercom, and everybody had to hear this. Wallerstein, speech, in room 401. Okay, I'm a fifth grader. I don't forget, you see, look what I turned into, look what it did to me. Okay, and this is after years of therapy. Look what happened to me. And, of course, kids have no pity. So on my way out the door, they're like, South, she sells. Let's see you say it. Now, I walk through the gauntlet. I walk through the gauntlet. And that, not only that, my school wasn't really co-ed, but it was girls, and then there was a door, and then there were boys. And on my way to that room, because the room that they had the speeches happened to be on the girls' side, the girls would say, cute lisp. That's not funny when you're a kid. Okay? I know what it feels like. Moshe Rabbeinu is going not to a speech therapist. Moshe Rabbeinu is going in front of the whole Mitzrayim, and he can't talk. And he's saying to Hashem, I'm begging you, don't do this to me. Let me live in my excuse in the desert. I'll be a good shepherd. I'll daven every morning, put on my tefillin, I'll do what I have to. Why are you doing this to me? And at this point, when he said that, and here the Torah keeps telling us over and over, like seven times in Shmos, he's a Ralph of a sign, he can't talk, he can't talk, he can't talk, he can't talk. Hey, what are you doing? What are you embarrassing Moshe Rabbeinu? Say it once. You don't have to say it once. Because the Torah wants to teach us something very important. Because finally, the last thing Hashem says to him is, Leom Hashem Elov, so you're worried about you're talking, me some Pela Adam. Who gave you this? Who gave you speech? I gave you speech. If I gave you speech, and I'm the one who gave you, who gives a person a disability? Where do we get a disability from? It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every guy in this room, that's right, I'm not, I don't want to push any buttons. Everybody has different parents. Everybody comes from a different background. Everybody looks different. So some people say to themselves, if I would have been born a religious home, then I wouldn't have gone through everything I went through. If my parents would get along, then I wouldn't have had to do drugs to get out of that house. If this wouldn't have happened, so God, why'd you put me in this family? I'm in a crazy family. Why don't you put me in a normal family? Why wasn't I born in the middle of Meir Shearim or Rav Aharon Chassid? So I would have no problems. Television, all this stuff, girls, it doesn't exist. I would have been sitting and learning. Why did you do this to me? And why am I tall? And why am I short? And why am I a good ball player? He's not a good ball. Why does this guy have 140 IQ and I have a 110 or 102 IQ? Why do I come from Arizona? Why do I come from New York? Why was I born in this neighborhood? So you have to know something. That anything in this world that you weren't giving a choice, that you have no bechira, you have no bechira who your parents are. Too bad. Hashem chose your parents, everyone's parents, chose them just for you. He could have put you in any family. He put you in that family. He gave you that face. He gave you that height. He gave you that body. He gave you those brains. Because that is your test. That is what you were brought to this world. It's not your choice. If it's not your choice, then it's your test. Something that's your choice is a different question. But if you're put in a not religious family, then you have to start from there and you have to end up at a different place. If you're put in a religious family, then your test is something else. And therefore, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Who gave you the power of speech? Who did this to your tongue? You think power did this to your tongue? You think someone could burn your mouth if I don't want it to happen? I did this. And I did this for a reason. And therefore, since it's not your choice, you have to overcome. That's your game board. That's what you have to overcome. And therefore, in races and anything else, right? Depending on, like in my class, there were kids that were fatter and thinner and taller and this and that. So I gave each kid in the starting position was not the same starting position. Everybody has a different starting position. Everybody has different tests in this world. So Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, what are you worried about? I gave you this test. So if I do this to you and I'm telling you to go talk, all of a sudden you're going to stutter and you're going to listen. They're going to listen to you anyway. So Hashem said, I will be in your disability. Whether you're not born religious, whether your parents don't get along, whatever you're going through in life, whether you have an addiction, whatever you're going through in life, if you had no choice, if it wasn't your choosing, then I am in that disability. And that's what the Torah says. And if I'm in the disability because I brought it, I'll take you out. I'll be there with you. An unbelievable speech Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu still said no. You'd think, you know, after such a shir, he would say yes. He was so battered. He still said no. And then finally Hashem said, and that's where my shir is. That's what my shir is about tonight. Hashem said, the bottom line is, lech. Enough talk. Enough excuses. Enough feeling sorry for yourself. Two letters. Lech, get up! Get out of the desert! Become Moshe Rabbeinu! Don't become Moshe, the lamb chop king of the desert. Because that's your choices. That's your Bechira. Boys, listen to what I'm telling you very carefully. You want to know what your Bechira is? Your Bechira is, what do you do with your disability? That's your choice. The disability isn't your choice. Where you come from isn't your choice. You, nobody had a choice where they were born or who their parents are, who their brothers and sisters are, what yeshiva they ended up into. It wasn't your choice, you were kids. Your choice is, what are you doing with what you went through in life? Are you helping others and saying, I've been there, done that? And the guy looks up to you and says, and you turned out okay, then I can turn out okay. That's the correct Bechira. The incorrect Bechira is, yeah, I feel bad for myself. I'm gonna hermetize myself. I'm going to sleep 19 hours a day. I'm going to drink myself. And I need anesthesia. I'm in pain. I'm going to smoke up. I'm going to drink up. Because you know what, Hashem? It's your fault. Look what you did to me. That's the only choice you have in life. Good and bad, and what you do with your disability. Tzedakah Baruch Hu to him, enough! Lech! You can take your disability and you can become Moshe Rabbeinu. Let me tell you something that I tell all the teachers in my school. There's only one mouth ever since the creation of the world that God ever spoke pe'el pe to. Not Avraham, not Yitzchak, not Yaakov, not Yosef, not David, nobody. The only mouth Hashem chose to speak mouth to mouth was a mouth with a burnt and twisted tongue that stuttered and lisped and that could not speak. Hashem said, that's the mouth I want to talk to. Why? Because he took that disability and he became Moshe Rabbeinu. And in the end, in the Medrash, at the end, in the Pashas Vezei Sabrach, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, we don't understand what this means, but the Medrash says that Hashem bent down, and he put his lips on Moshe Rabbeinu's lips, and kissed him, and through the kiss took his neshama. Nobody else. Not like that, nobody else. Those burnt, twisted lips, that Moshe Rabbeinu was scared. How am I going to talk to Paro? How am I going to talk to human beings? They're going to make fun of me? Hashem said, talk? I'm going to kiss those lips. Because you took your disability, instead of using it for an excuse and feeling sorry for yourself, you became the leader of Klal Yisrael. You became Moshe Rabbeinu. And I want to bring this story to you so you understand who Moshe Rabbeinu was. And after all this, Klal Yisrael still didn't let him down. Kairach, the Meraglim, everybody complaining and giving him a hard time. You took us out to die. Look at every Pasha. And all he did was say, "Machani no Mesifuch of God, you hurt the Jews, wipe me out. I am their leader." And every single person, says the Zayar, has a nitzitz, has a spark, has a DNA flag from Moshe Rabbeinu. You could not learn Torah, you cannot be a Jew. We all, to be able to learn Torah, to be a Jew, to be successful, we all need to have that nitzitz, that spark of not making excuses, but of not feeling our, but stepping up and lech, and getting up with your life and getting things done. So I want to end with a bracha to everybody. And to understand a little bit, one of the hardest questions that David HaMelech asked and Moshe Rabbeinu asked and we all ask is, we see so many good people suffer and we see so many bad people prosper. And there's many answers, but I just want to give you one short answer to the story that I heard. It was a father who had three sons. One son, he loved, the son was amazing. He helped his father, he took care of his father. They loved each other, unbelievable. The second son, once in a while, he was good to his father when he needed him, but he wasn't so bad. The third son was a Russia. Oh, Russia, the worst guy in the world. He hated his father. He made his father miserable. He was a miserable guy. They lived on an island. One day, the father called in the three sons. He said, listen, all these years we're living on this island, I want you to know that I have a very, I'm about to die, I'm very old, and you're young guys, you can't live on an island by yourself. And I want you to know that outside, across the ocean, not that far away, is a mainland, is a country that I came from. And the first one of you, it's a race, the first guy that gets to the mainland, gets all my properties there. I have properties and cars and houses. The guy that gets there first, he's the one who will get the whole Yerusha of mine. Okay? So, the first guy tells the son that he loves very much. He says, listen, go down to the seashore, and my servants have your boat waiting for you. He goes running down to the seashore, sitting there on the water. Is a kayak. You know that one little rowboat where the one guy fits in with the paddles? And the guy's like, that's what my father gives me to go row across the ocean? He goes, how am I ever going to win? But you know what? He loved his father. His father loved him. He knew that it can't be, my father was very smart, it can't be that he's just doing this to hurt me. We had such a good relationship. So he gets into the kayak and he starts to row across the ocean. 2 hours later, calls in the next son. This is the mediocre son. Says, go down, your boat's waiting for you. Goes down. There's a beautiful big schooner, a beautiful big sailing boat, beautiful sails. And he says, wow, that's really cool. My brother got a rowboat, and I got a sailboat. He gets on, I'm going to beat him by 100 miles. I'm going to get all the money. Gets onto the sailboat, gets the sails up, and he starts going. Half an hour later, the father calls his son, that's the Russia, the worst guy in the world. He says, your boat's waiting for you. He comes down, a huge yacht, party yacht. They got a restaurant upstairs and girls and a liquor and waiters, a party yacht. And this guy's like, man, I can't believe it. Secretly, my dad loved me the most. My brother who took care of my father all the time, had a little rowboat. My other brother, sailboat, party boat, gets on the boat. And they're going. Nebuch, this poor guy, the sun's beating down. He's rowing. He's got blisters on his hands. His back of his neck is burnt. He's schwitzing. And all of a sudden, he didn't know what his brother's got. All of a sudden, a sailboat comes by. And his brother's waving. Hey, goody goody. How you doing? He's got his sails up. He's sitting there. He's got his capitone on. He's laying there. You know, Baruch Hashem, life is good. Right? And he's like, eh? And this guy just goes whizzing right by him. And he's like, Tati, what did you do here? Dad, what did you do to me? How could you give my brother a sailboat and give me a little rowboat? My back is hurting, I got blisters, the sun is burning me. What's going on over here? And then the other guy shows up. He's sitting there, all of a sudden, huge big yacht. There's music, they're dancing, they're drinking. And the Russia comes to the side and he screams down, hey, goody goody! Too bad. See you on the other side. See you at the mainland. And then he turns to the captain and says, you know what? Let's teach this goody brother of mine a lesson. Let's make a real fast circle, make a huge wave, and let's turn him over. So he takes the boat. You know, you're doing the lake when you try to turn over the other kid's boat, you know? He zips around, makes this big wave. It hits Nebuch the kayak, psh, flips right over. The guy falls out. He has to get back on. He finally gets himself back in the kayak, and the yacht is gone. Gets to the kayak, he's dripping water. He's burned. His hands are killing him. And he takes the oars and he just puts it down. He says, I'm just not going to be made a fool of. So if I die, I die. I'm not doing this. That's how you reward my brother who hated you, and then my other brother, and this is what you do to me, Dad? I don't have anything to do with you anymore. And he sits there in the boat just floating along like this. And he's thinking, he's saying to himself, doesn't make sense. My father was normal. It doesn't make sense. I got to try to make it. Gets back on, and he starts going again. And to make a long story short, because it's a long story, he's going for about a mile or two, and all of a sudden, he sees the yacht. And they're waving a big white flag. Hey, can you help us? We're stuck. What's wrong? Dad didn't put much gas in this yacht. Oh. So the bad brother says to him, can I jump in? Can you have room for me? He's like, you know what? As bad as you are, if I had room, I'd let you in my boat. But there's only room for one. And he continues going. And the weather charts were showing a huge storm was coming. And the wind was totally blowing in the wrong direction. And all of a sudden, as he's rowing, He sees the sailboat coming the wrong way. And his brother's screaming, "Turn the sail!" Screaming! And the sails are getting blown all over the place, and this guy's going the wrong way, and he passes his brother. He says, "Can I get into your boat?" He's like, "I would love to let you, but there's only room for one." And he's gone. Probably past the yacht, you know. They're both gone. And he says to himself, "Aha." And he starts rowing, and all of a sudden, of course, he gets to the other shore, and his two brothers are stuck out there until they get towed for like 2 weeks, and he ends up getting the prize. This is the story of our lives. We sit there, and many of the guys in this room have given up a lot to learn to become religious. And your friends that have not given up anything, they're making money, they're getting the girls, they're getting married, life is great, and we're suffering. Like, yeah, you know, I'm glad I'm trying everything else, but you know what, especially when you try to change, so right away in the beginning, things start going wrong. Because when you belong to the Yetzer Hara and then you leave him, you know, he likes to keep you happy. He likes to keep people happy, because if he keeps you happy, you don't go to God. When things are bad, when you're sick, you go to God. When you're losing your money, you go to God. When you belong to the Yetzer Hara, you're doing Averis, he's like, let's keep him healthy. We're not going to talk to God if he's doing Averis. Let's give him money. The more money he gets, the more girls he gets, the more everything he gets, he's not going to look for God. He's happy. So the minute you walk away from the Yetzer Hara, he is not doing that no more. So he pulls back all those goodies he was giving you to keep you away from Hashem, because now you're going towards Hashem. So usually when we try to change, certain things in our life fall first. That's why they fall. It's a Zayah. That's why they fall. Because you just disconnected from the Yetzer Hara. He ain't giving you nothing. So now you need to reconnect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you'll get the real stuff. But many times we see that. There are girls that I deal with that come to seminary here for 2 years, right? And they want to change and they want to learn. They come back and all their friends that are bumming around, they're all married and pregnant with kids, and then they come back and they're looking for this and looking for that, and this guy's no good, and that's not good. All of a sudden they're 26 years old and they did the right thing and they're not married, and their 19 year old friend that they left in America that was a party girl, she's married with 3 kids, and they sit there and they say, Rabbi Wallerstein, what's the deal with God here? And we always ask that question, Tzadik V'ralo Rasha V'toivoy. But you don't get to see the end of the race. You don't get to see the end of a person's life. You don't get to see the generations later. You see the yacht, party time, the sailboat fly by, and you're schwitzing, you're learning, and you're trying and trying to learn a piece of Gemara, and it's not getting into your head, and you're working so hard and it's not working, and you just see everybody fly by. All my friends are doing the wrong thing, they're doing great, and I'm schwitzing, and sometimes your friends come along and they tip over your boat. Oh, you think you're doing so good, you think you're learning, flip them over. Yeah, they try to bring you down, give them a little flip, because they don't want to see you do better, because that makes, they have to do better. They got to look in the mirror and say, if he did it, I can do it. So it's much easier, instead of doing it, to get the other guy not to do it. We all know that. So we have to understand that if the boat we have is a slow boat and a painful boat, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who loves you, who loves the tzaddik, the one who's doing the right thing, he's not hurting you. It may go a little bit slower, but their party is 50 years, 70 years, 80 years, and then they're stuck in the middle of the ocean. They can't get to Gan Eden. They can't get to Mashiach. They can't get to Olam Haba. They're stuck. There's no wind. There's no gas. There's no way to go. And you, who are schwitzing and working very hard, you're going to get there. And you're going to sit by the Suda when Mashiach comes. You're going to be there, not them. May we all be zeichah, everyone in this room, for the hard work and the changing and the suffering that you're going through, and everything that you're going through, to know that you are the matah. You are the stick in Hashem's hand. And if you are the stick in Hashem's hand, you can do anything. And I brought this lamp for a reason. I want to show you something. And that's the end of the shir. It's a very simple thing, but it's something that you need to see. I'm going to unplug this. Okay, here is a lamp. Everyone agree? Okay. The lamp is the human being. The lamp is the human being. The bowl is your neshama. Now, a lot of people have a question. And they're sitting in yeshiva, and they're trying to figure out my body, my neshama, and I'm trying, and I'm trying, and I'm davening, and I'm trying, and there's nothing happening. And they're searching and they're looking, and then they go through therapy, they go through all kinds of things in life. Why isn't my life working? Why am I failing in this? Why am I failing in that? Why am I failing in that? It doesn't make sense. My goof is good. My neshama is good. It's not happening. You know why it's not happening? Because the plug is out. No matter how good the lamp is, if it's not plugged in, it doesn't happen. And many of us are looking, we're looking for all kinds of stuff to make me happy. I'm not drugs or cigarettes or alcohol, not chas v'shalom, anything like that. But we're looking for all kinds of different things to make us happy. We don't understand, we keep looking, we're not happy. And the reason is because the plug is out. If you put the plug in, it's very simple, this light better go on or else. If you put the plug in, it becomes very simple. Guys, all you need to do is plug into God. All you need to do is understand that we are all a stick in Hashem's hand. You be a stick in Hashem's hand, and don't let anyone in this world, including yourself, ever tell you that there's something good that you cannot do. Hashem says there is. You can come from the background of Moshe Rabbeinu and go through everything he went through, and you can become a leader, you can become Moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone in this room has a koyach. Plug in. This is the best place. I love our Sameach. This is a huge, you know what our Sameach is? A huge, if you took a satellite and you looked at our Sameach on Earth, you know what you'd see? A huge outlet. Just plug in. Have a good night. Yeah.